Today's program has been brought to you by Route 11 Potato Chips. Made with a secret recipe and superior ingredients, their mission is to make an outstanding product in a safe and clean environment. For more information, visit www.rt11.com.
You're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.org, a nonprofit, member-supported radio station. We're millions strong, with folks tuning in from over 200 countries. We are education. We are entertainment. We are the future of food. May is our membership drive. Become a member and support us while receiving e-newsletters, advanced invites, special discounts, and a membership card. We need your support. Visit our website and click the donate button to become a member today. Thank you for believing in us and enjoy the show.
New York City pride is legendary, and New Yorkers' hunger for locally made goods, everything from lingerie to produce, to items that support their city, has reinvigorated a variety of industries. In order to support these efforts, the Pratt Center for Community Development has launched the nonprofit initiative Made in NYC. Here to talk about Made in NYC is Adam Friedman, the director of the Pratt Center for Community Development. I'm Mariana Kotlier, and this is a community session of the Heritage Radio Network. Hi, Adam. How are you?
I'm well. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much. So tell us a little bit about Made in NYC.
It is a reinvigorated or relaunched initiative to capitalize on just the extraordinary depth and wealth and diversity of New York's design talent, which runs the gamut, fashion, food, and furnishings, and to really pump up the local economy by directing more consumer spending to local manufacturers, including food companies.
That's very exciting. And what was the inspiration behind this initiative?
Well, in truth, we got to go back a little bit. It actually was launched after 9/11, when industry in the city, manufacturing in the city, was just shut down for logistics reasons, right? You couldn't get trucks in and out of the city. And we wanted to help manufacturers to buy from each other. So we launched and Made in NYC as a business-to-business initiative. But what's happened over time, first of all, it's grown just by leaps and bounds. There's over 1,000 companies now on the Made in NYC website. But what's happened over time is far greater consumer interest in shopping locally and buying locally made food products and other products. And so in recognition of that, we decided to rebrand, recreate, reposition the website, and relaunch it as a business-to-consumer initiative to help New Yorkers find locally made food products and locally made fashion.
That's great. And how have you seen consumers begin to respond to that?
Oh, it's been fabulous. just one tiny little illustration, actually, is a pilot that we had done after Hurricane Sandy. One of the things that companies really needed was sales, was to create cash flow. Mm-hmm. They were shut down, they weren't getting materials, they were unable to ship, and we put up a holiday store around Made in NYC in order to create a vehicle for New Yorkers to help companies that were impacted by it. And in almost no time, we had well over 200 companies, many, many, many food companies, and we were getting well over 2,000 hits a day on the website, and that traffic was passing through to the companies. So we've just relaunched Made in NYC last week. We immediately started getting 3,000 hits a day, unique visitors to the website. It's going fabulous, and there's already stories about how it's generating business for companies. The whole Made NYC initiative is generating business and creating jobs locally.
That's really exciting. So, from a business's perspective or a manufacturer's perspective, what's the criteria for getting that Made in NYC brand and being a part of your network?
They actually have to transform a physical product in New York City. They actually have to be producing it here, and they actually have to have one employee, at least one employee.
Mm-hmm.
And we validate everything. We actually go out and visit the companies. They register online, and before they can get up online, before they can be posted, we'll go out and we'll talk to them and get a sense of what their needs are and validate that they're doing business in New York City.
So somewhere in the five boroughs, and they have to transform a product here and have an employee somewhere in New York City,
okay. Right, in one of the five boroughs.
Great. So obviously we're, you know, a food radio station and very passionate about food. And I, in particular, am very curious about some of the food vendors and manufacturers that are a part of your network. Can you give us, you know, an idea of the spectrum of different types of food companies?
As long as you don't ask me for my favorite, because they're all our children. We love them all. Right? Well, Steve Key Lime Pie is one of the founding members, the official Key Lime Pie of the Pratt Center. They're in production in Red Hook. We have pickle companies. We have chocolate companies. Just one thing on the chocolate vendors. We did a study like 2 or 3 years ago, and we looked at the export potential of these companies and the extent to which they were actually bringing wealth into the city.
Mm-hmm.
And somehow we discovered that New York City actually exports more than $20 million worth of chocolate every year, which is incredible because New York is a high-cost environment.
Sure.
So we're not competing on the basis of cost. We're clearly competing on the basis of quality.
Of course.
So the other thing that's sort of relevant to this is, you know, New York is this great big naturally occurring test kitchen, right? People come to New York City from 149 countries, and each of those immigrant groups creates a submarket for the food products of that country or that immigrant group. And so they develop their own food products, and then they sort of cross over and there's this blending that goes on, or they cross over into mainstream products, and that's the growth. And it's kind of funny to think of the food industry as a designer industry like fashion is,
mm-hmm.
but that's totally what's going on in New York City.
Sure.
New York City is the absolute epicenter of design, and you see that across the board through many spectrums, and food in particular.
Now, that's kind of a perfect segue to my next question, which is, you know, so many, as you mentioned, it is kind of the next, you know, food is sort of the next design or designer
mm-hmm.
product. And, you know, a lot of this is kind of being formulated as these really unique, special craft products. And many of these, if not most, I would say, are focused in Brooklyn. So I'm wondering, you know, is there any demand for there to be like a subset made in Brooklyn kind of component from any of those food companies or other companies that feel like that brand sort of adds more to their cachet and what they're trying to stand for?
That's a really good question. And I'll tell you why we've tried not to go there. We've avoided kind of that sub-branding because it really is one great big marketplace.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, what I think we would do is sort of risk the balkanization of New York. We want consumers from Queens to buy products made in Brooklyn. We want consumers in Brooklyn to be buying products in Queens. And you're right that at this moment in history, Brooklyn definitely has the brand cachet. Without a doubt, they have the greatest strength. But you have to worry that over time, that may change.
Sure.
And so we really have to sort of stay united as a city in approaching this issue.
Mm-hmm. And then I guess the converse of that is, you know, are you doing anything to sort of help producers that are in boroughs that maybe might get less attention, you know, Bronx or Queens, help kind of highlight the unique aspects of what's going on in those communities?
Yes, definitely. Some of the things that we're doing is there's actually, if you were a manufacturer and needed more programmatic assistance, so we're trying to figure out, well, how do I ramp up? How do I scale up? How do I find space? How do I reach more consumers? We'll be launching a series of sessions or training sessions for entrepreneurs. How do they strengthen their brand? How do they deal with distributors? How do they get financing? What are the new retail channels that are opening so that a food producer can go direct to their consumer instead of going to a retailer, you know, who then goes to the consumer. Sure. So there's both a programmatic element, and then there's this branding element as well.
Of course, of course. And now going back to the, you know, the initial ethos or the initial mission of Made in NYC post 9/11, can you talk a little bit more about some of those programs, how you're helping the manufacturers themselves kind of source some of their primary products on the local market?
Sure. Well, a couple of things. You know, I think for years, decades, economic development as a profession tried to lure companies, otherwise known as smokestack chasing, by offering tax abatements or offering a lower cost way of doing something. Mm-hmm. And what's changed over time is sort of the realization that that's not what drives a business decision. What drives a business decision is sales. And offering somebody a tax break is not helpful if they have no income, you know, to use that tax break against. Mm-hmm. So the whole Made in NYC strategy, it represents sort of the next wave in economic development practice by driving more sales to the local businesses. So as I said, we let me give you one illustration of that. It's not a food-related one, but we might launch something similar in food. You know, the last wave of commercial office building in the city, the developers finally recognize that we have to make these buildings as sustainable as possible. We have to use the most energy-efficient lighting fixtures. We have to use green wall coverings and green features. And we have to have as much natural light as possible. And we had an initiative called Spec It Green, which was to link the architects and the developers and the contractors and anyone who purchased building products with local manufacturers of green building materials. So what we were doing was trying to strengthen the supply chain between the consumers, the demand side, and local manufacturers in order to stimulate business and create jobs. And that's very much sort of on the agenda here, where we're getting out, but demand or the consumer side of the market is much more diffuse. It's millions of consumers making individual choices. Mm-hmm. So our challenge is how to reach literally millions of consumers, millions of shoppers, to give them this option, to create this pathway to local manufacturers.
Great. And can you speak a little then to how that experience might translate onto the food side? I mean, whether it's, you know, through creating food hubs for fresh produce or encouraging, you know, grain growing in upstate New York that can be located, you know, that's easier to access.
That's funny you should say that. We just finished a study called From Farm to Factory, which was funded by New York State Ag and Markets, looking at how local bakeries could use more upstate grains.
Oh, great.
But one of the things that's very much in the works is a cooperative distribution model, where instead of each individual food company having either their own trucks or having to take their product into each individual restaurant or retailer in the city, how we can sort of pool them by having those food hubs, how we can pool their deliveries in order to cut down on truck traffic into the city and also reduce their distribution costs.
Fantastic. Well, I'm really excited to see some of the results from that study, because that sounds really
right. It seems like such an obvious thing to do in such a dense city where you know there's so much traffic, and yet it's the mechanics and the logistics of thinking how do we get everyone to bring their food products together at one central location, who owns it, who bears the risk of loss going into the city, and then how do we get the feedback? How do you don't want to lose a food company doesn't want to lose touch with its market. It's critical that they know what their consumers, whether they're restaurateurs or retailers, tell them. So you have to build in that whole sort of information flow into the distribution system.
Absolutely.
It's a very exciting project.
Absolutely. That's great. Is there a time frame for when the results for that might be available?
Hopefully the end of June.
Oh, great.
So we're enmeshed in it now.
Great, great, great. I have one last question, and that's actually about your funders. So I was very curious to see, you know, there are three somewhat obvious players, the New York City Council, New York State Department of Agriculture and Markets, City Community Development, but then also Zazzle. How did those, diverse players kind of all come together to support this effort?
Well, I think they all see the value of local economic growth. You know, the why is Zazzle different or why is it similar? You know, what they are is a new channel of distribution. And it goes to the earlier point of how can we help local companies by going direct?
Mm-hmm.
And they have that capacity. And I just have to add, we think that model actually promotes sustainability because consumers are able to seek out, to find, and to order what they want, what they need, as opposed to the products, whether they're in food or any other sector, sort of being pushed down into the market.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's very much a consumer-driven model. And I think in the end that will result in less waste and kind of less consumer-driven, consumerism, less excess spending.
Sure. Great. Well, that's all the time we have, but thank you so much, Adam Friedman, for being with us today. The project is Made in NYC, and you can check it out at www.madeinnyc.org. I'm Mariana Kotlier, and this has been a special session of the Heritage Radio Network. Thanks so much.
Very much.
Take care.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.